Let's face it, in today's uncertain times, simple conversations about your health can have powerful results.
There's something you are likely eating every day. It can negatively affect your waistline, complexion, and overall health.
On the Dr. Gundry podcast, Stephen Gundry, a renowned cardiothoracic surgeon and New York Times best-selling author, cuts through the BS to help you make better health choices.
You have the ability to heal yourself if you give yourself the right ingredients to do it with.
Dr. Gundry has spent the last 20 years empowering people around the world to help reverse and prevent some of our most serious ailments through the power of diet and lifestyle changes.
You will change 90% of you. You will be a brand new you.
Tune in to the Dr. Gundry podcast to start your health journey. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and anywhere you get your podcasts.
Because I'm Dr. Gundry, and I'm always looking out for you.
Well, next up, I want to tell you about Plexaderm. And of course, summer now is in the rearview mirror. It's time to get the autumn groove on. Kids hopefully are going back to school, and hopefully we're getting back to some sort of normalcy. A lot is changing. It's hard to keep track of. Every day is different. And as a result, we might take our eye off the ball of paying proper attention to our own self-care. That's important. Our moods are off. Self-care adds to us feeling good about ourselves, even when things are uncertain around us. And with Plexaderm, all you need is 10 minutes and you can look 10 years younger. Plexaderm is a clinically studied serum that gives your appearance the right kind of changes, visibly reduce wrinkles, fine lines, and even under eye bags in just minutes. Take up to 10 years off your appearance in less than 10 minutes. The results will last for hours, so you can take the family out, say, to a pumpkin patch. Of course, wearing your mask and distancing and all that good stuff. But speaking of masks, because we are just looking at each other's eyes, a lot of people are thinking about surgery, frankly, but you don't need to. You can take care of those wrinkles and bags with Plexaderm. I mean, we're thinking a lot about what our eyes look like because that's all we're seeing of one another. So here's the deal. You can try a 6-application trial pack for just $14.95 with free shipping when you visit BuyPlex. Now, it's spelled a special way, BuyPlex, buyplex.com/Drew, or call 800-685-1292, 800-685-1292, and then say code Drew if you call. The order also comes with free shipping and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Make the wrinkles, lines, and bags disappear with Plexaderm. Visit BuyPlex. What do you got to lose? Don't even think about surgery. Think about Plexaderm. BuyPlex.com/Drew or call 800-685-1292 and say code Drew at checkout. Hey, everybody, welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. We appreciate you being here. We appreciate you liking, downloading, subscribing, being a part of this. We really do. And do check out drdrew.tv. Don't forget the YouTube/Dr. Drew where I do the stream every day. Check out that Megyn Kelly interview. I think you might enjoy that. As well as me and Adam, of course. And After Dark. Don't forget about After Dark. All the mommies over there. And do keep wind in the sail of the Corolla Pirate Ship by supporting those that support us. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Kevin Harrington. The book is Mentor to Millions, Secret Success in Business, Relationships, and Beyond. Available Amazon, etc. Website is mentortomillionsbook.com. You can follow Kevin at harrington.kevin with 2 R's, Harrington. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dr. Drew. Appreciate it.
So you've been you've had the entrepreneurial spirit since you were essentially a older child, let's say. Yeah?
Teenager, yes.
Well, I heard you started selling papers at age 9.
Well, that's true. I did have a couple of papers back in the early days, right?
Yeah. And do you attribute that, you know, as often is the case, some of the hardships of childhood get converted into the motivational systems of adolescence and young adulthood. Is there something like that in your story?
I think a couple of things. I'm one of 6 kids, Cincinnati, Ohio. My dad was a bartender and tried to take care of my older sisters as good as he could. Finally, and they went to great schools. I came along, you know, went to an all boys Catholic high school. So not a great school too, but, I started working. He opened up his own restaurant finally. So he became an entrepreneur at 11 years old. I was working in his restaurant, but not just washing dishes. He'd have me in the back, closing out the money at the end of the night, dealing with suppliers and watching out for employees that were stealing and really brought me in on the inside track.
So interesting. So, so you really had a business education in a way, right?
I did.
Supply chain, employee issues, you know, human resource management, accounting, basic accounting.
Steaks.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
The beer guy would deliver two kegs of beer, take two empties to the truck, and he caught him taking full ones back to the truck. But he's the guy. I was the one counting the kegs. So it's like my dad's like, "Oh, so you're getting over on an 11-year-old here, huh?" Well, I was learning all the inside out of that, and then finally, my dad was paying me $1 an hour.
Nice, this is back big money in them days.
This was in the 60s. Okay.
So, yeah. Listen, my first minimum wage job was $1.69, if I remember right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, let's see, I started in the restaurant 1967 or 68, and $1 an hour was not too bad. I mean, I think it might have been minimum wage at the time.
Yeah.
I finally said, I want to make more money. So he then pushed me to start my own business. And when I was 15, I started sealing driveways, asphalt sealing, and filling in the cracks, but knocking on doors. I'd get one driveway in the neighborhood, put a sign across it, and then I'd get 15 more in the neighborhood. So literally keeping really busy during the summer, 15, 16, 17. Then when I was graduating from high school, my dad said, well, you're going to have to pay for your education, your books, your apartment, your car, your insurance. I said, I need a full-time income. And I went and started then. So I had to transition from heating it from driveway ceiling to heating and air conditioning. Okay, so installing furnaces and air conditioning systems. But what I was doing, I was buying the leads from the courthouse of new homeowner transactions and offering a free furnace cleaning while I was in school, my freshman and sophomore year. And then by the end of the first year, we had six trucks, six crews installing, 25 employees, and I'm still doing a full-time college schedule. Of course, then I had to drop out. I couldn't do both. So quit school and continued to be an entrepreneur.
Student or tin knocker? One or the other.
What's that? Yeah.
Student or tin knocker? Which am I going to be?
Yeah. I was doing well and you know, having fun, but shortly realized the labor side of installing furnaces and the geographic aspect of it. I was only going to be in Cincinnati. We were never going to be able to grow to, you know, tens of millions doing this. So one of my employees said, if you ever want to sell this business, I'm a buyer. We did a transaction. And then I said, okay, I want my real education in business. Mm. And I said, how do you, you know, I'm a college dropout, had money from the sale of a company, but I'm like, now I'm looking, I'm meeting with business brokers and they're showing me dozens and dozens of businesses and financial statements of businesses and all this stuff. I said, that's what I want to do until I figure out what I really want to do. I'm going to broker businesses because I had a real estate license, got a broker's license, and I'm selling pizza parlors, delicatessens, laundromats, flower shops, all that kind of stuff. And this was now takes me to 1980, 40 years ago. And I set up something called the Small Business Center in Cincinnati, Ohio. I leased the whole floor of an office building and I was the broker. So I sold you the business and then I rented space to attorneys, insurance agents, all synergistic small business service providers. And so because I upcharged on the rent like WeWorks does, I got a free office with a free brokerage business. And then I got a percentage of the services that we provided the entrepreneurs. And sometimes I would start taking equity and partnering with them. And we advertising.
It was on by that point. You kind of toss off, oh, I had a realtor's license and a broker's license as though that was no big deal. That's a big deal, in the middle of all that. That's a huge deal.
Yeah. This was really an Entrepreneur Magazine saw what I was doing. They called me up. They said, hey, can you come out to L.A.? I didn't know. I said, yeah, they're going to write a story. Well, the photographer's like, wow, how'd you get the cover story this month? And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, yeah, we're shooting you for the cover. And I'm like, oh, that's that. And that was in the early 80s. So and then when I left the interview, The publisher said, I want to partner with you with this small business center. So we did. We opened up 30 of them around the United States.
Wow.
And this was, again, back in the early 80s.
I want to jump ahead to a few things just because it's on my top of my mind right now. So you ended up being one of the original Shark Tank participants.
Yes.
How did you find that experience? And B, did you actually invest in some companies that made a difference for you?
Yeah. So after all of that that I just told you.
We're going to go back. I'm going to go back to back to HSN and all that other stuff. But I'm just thinking about that. Gotcha. So I thought I'd ask you that.
So I had written a book that was really kind of my first book, although years back I had another book. But I went HCI International. They did Chicken Soup for the Soul. I wrote a book with them called Act Now. And because I was dealing with so many inventors and people with products, and what most of these folks would tell me, they come up to me, oh, I've had this idea for 10 years. Will you help me? I was like, why did you sit on it for 10 years? Or I had it, someone knocked me off. And like people were afraid to act. Mm-hmm. So I wrote the book and I started doing radio talk shows and promoting the book. And this is when Mark Burnett tuned in to what I was doing, because I started a publicity tour on this book 10 plus years ago. And so Mark called me up and said, hey, I'm following you on all these interviews and seeing you all over the place. Can we meet? I want to tell you about the new show I'm doing called Shark Tank. Went out, met him in LA. And literally at the end of the meeting, he said, look, there's only one thing missing. He said, everything went great. I've seen you on interviews. I've seen you in person, but I just don't know if you can be a shark. So you mind doing an audition? And I'm like, no, I said, let's go. So literally I went from my meeting with Mark in his office over to another room. They had a guy from ABC Network was there. The producer of Shark Tank, Clay Newbill, was there. And we did a mock interview, like they're coming to pitch me. And I had been doing that already for 30 years. Okay.
Right,
so
right.
At the Houseware Show and the Hardware Show. And so I just like, this guy came at me with, you got this and this. And I think it went very good. So much so that they called me and said, you are the first one that we're picking to be a shark. Okay. And that's why they sometimes refer to me as the original shark, but I'm certainly in the original cast of sharks. But, and so yes, the show, it was a bittersweet situation. I loved being the shark on the show. The challenge in the early seasons, and I was there for the pilot and all the first, you know, season and it's into season two before Mark Cuban came in. And so the challenge was nobody, when we were filming season one, nobody knew what Shark Tank was because
right.
We had never been on the air.
So you couldn't get any good businesses to pitch you.
The businesses suck.
Right.
I mean, Mark Burnett even, we'd sit there, we'd do 8 or 10, nobody was investing, and Mark Burnett would come down, hey, what's wrong, guys? We need good television here. And we're like, Mark, which one of those 8 deals would you have put your own money into?
Right.
He's like, okay, I get you. Let's see what we can do. Then the next segment, oh, we're fighting like crazy to do the deal. But I did make some good deals, and I'll say this. That being on Shark Tank was great. And I, you know, one of the deals I did was a product called City Kitty. It was a cat toilet training product. Now, people say, why did you want to do that? This woman comes out, cat jumps up on the toilet, goes to the bathroom, jumps off. And all the sharks, we just broke out cracking up. And I saw this as a viral video kind of thing.
Sure.
So I did the deal knowing, number one, we got 5 minutes on ABC Network. Number two, ABC is also Good Morning America and The View. And so we're probably, this is, you know.
A few cat owners in there. A few cat owners amongst them, yeah.
Yeah. So I took that deal. We did over $10 million in sales of that product and didn't have to spend very much money advertising because we got on The View. We got on Good Morning America, The Today Show. I got it on Wendy Williams, et cetera. So, you know, we had a lot of fun with that product. But others, I had some jewelry deals. I had about 4 or 5 deals that I did. And actually, this is what started happening. I would turn, you know, like, I'm not going to do the deal on TV because that day I'd already spent $500,000, $600,000 And I'm like, I'm not going to make any more deals today unless something really powerful comes along. So I would turn them down. I'd get home 2-3 weeks later, get a phone call. Hey, I know you didn't do that deal on Shark Tank. I don't really need your money, but can I give you the equity and then just be part of my company? I need your mentoring advice. Hmm. So this is where everything started coming in here with the book Mentor to Millions. Hmm. I just stopped. I didn't do the deals, but the people wanted the advice. They wanted that golden Rolodex, as you say, right? Mm-hmm. As I say. So I started picking up a couple deals like that. So, you know, like, you know, one of the deals that Lori Grenier did is a great product called Scrub Daddy. I've got a really powerful Amazon business that I'm involved with. And so we're doing Scrub Daddy on Amazon, and it's all retail and all the other things through, you know, other deals. So at the end of the day, being on the show has obviously been a great profile for people to come to me with their products and their opportunities.
I feel like a lot of venture capital sort of startups do a lot of this kind of relationship building in terms of bringing people into their company. Is that sort of a – they get – you know, I feel like I'm just sort of watching people do these things that they get way over their skis, but they bring in a great team. And then they get that team to help them pivot and bring things in line and make the real product.
Exactly,
is that sort of what's happening now? Yeah. I feel like that's the new world of tech in a weird way.
That's the new world. I call it – I mean, I've been preaching this now for 10 years straight that entrepreneurs starting out, especially if it's your first rodeo, get a dream team of experts. You can't – in today's world, it's so tough to do it alone, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, so – being a shark helps kind of come in to start that process, and then we surround it with experts from there along the way.
Yeah, yeah. And then you better listen to those experts too. I'm thinking of things like Theranos and stuff where they went way out of their skis and didn't pivot, didn't learn.
Right. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. When COVID hit, there were so many companies not prepared for what was about to happen. I mean – The retail industry got hurt. I mean, the Brooks Brothers, the Pier 1 Imports, guys, companies that were sort of hanging on a little bit, you know, all of a sudden were in terrible shape. They didn't have a direct-to-the-consumer strategy. And that ultimately, that's why Amazon is where they are, and many others are you know, filing for bankruptcy right now and things like that.
So speaking of direct consumer, you were part of the original sort of infomercial phenomena, right? Were you part of YPO?
I was the co-founder of EO. It was called YEO, and then it changed to EO, Entrepreneurs Organization. And EO, Vern Harnish and myself, Ted Leonsis, started YEO. It changed names to EO, and it's now in about 150 cities, 45 countries around the world. It's a nonprofit, great group of folks.
So these are,
and by the way, when you join EO, you get mentors that you meet with on a monthly basis. That's part of that's why EO has been so powerful, is the mentorship that happens inside of there.
Well, and YPO, same thing. I've known people in that, and I've spoken. I've done speaking for that organization.
Yeah.
And when I meet people in that organization, they always say the same thing, which was my what do they call it? Those groups of four that my they have a name for those groups.
EO is called Forum.
Forum, same thing in YPO.
Same thing.
Yeah, same thing.
The Forum, right?
Yeah, they'd always say, Forum, this was the magic, you know, those relationships in the Forum.
That's why people love EO, is Forum is amazing. I've been part of it since the founding in 1987.
And in both those organizations is embedded the notion that relationships are really a key aspect to not just business development, but the business itself. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, when I was growing my As Seen on TV business, I flatlined because we'd taken our profits and put them into inventory. And so I was sitting there with 40,000 unfulfilled orders back in the 80s that I couldn't get the inventory for. So it was a really bad situation because I had the orders, but I couldn't cash the credit cards until I shipped the product. Don't have the product so we can ship. I got turned down by five banks for funding. And then I said, I need to find a finance mentor. So I went through my network and ended up stumbling upon a former bank president who had retired. And he came in, he looked at my business and he said, sitting there right now, your business is not bankable. He said, but I know you met with five banks. He said, I know two or three of those guys. I can package this to make it bankable. And this is the deal. I'm going to do this for you absolutely free, no charge. I think I can get you a $3 million line of credit because, you know, you got a solid business here. He said, but it's all in how we present it. Give me 90 days to do it. And at the end of 90 days, if I'm successful, you've got the money, you do what you want. If you want to bring me on in some deal that we sit down and discuss, I'd be happy to discuss that. If you're a good guy and I'm a good guy, we'll find out in 90 days. Huh. And he got me the money. We crushed it from there. The company just took off and we 10x'd the growth of the company and he became my COO. So it worked out to be a really cool deal all the way around. He mentored me and then brought the capital in. We grew the business and took off. So I've always loved great mentors. And because the one skill set I had was being able to go knock on doors and sell, whether it was driveway ceiling or furnaces, didn't matter. But I wasn't good in finance and operations.
I find it sort of metaphorically interesting that you went from ceiling driveways to filling dead air on television, you know, fillers on driveways to filler on programming.
Hey, and, there you go.
Yeah. And that's where the infomercial came in. It was just sort of unused space on television programs.
I first ordered cable TV. It was in the early, like 82. And I had 30, the first package was 30 channels, you know, ESPN and HBO. I get to channel 30. It was Discovery. And there was nothing on, just these bars were on the screen. Right. So I called the cable company to see if there was a problem. And they said, no, it's a new channel that doesn't have a 24-hour budget. They just program 18 hours a day. So I said, well, can I fill that time with something? And they said, come on down. We talked and we started filming infomercials and shooting products. And then I went to the National Discovery Channel. I was dealing first with my local cable operator. I signed a 2-year deal for the 6-hour block exclusively on National Discovery Channel. That was the breakthrough. And that was in the early 80s.
How much did that cost, just out of curiosity?
$1,000 a day, $365,000 a year. And it was generating tens of millions of dollars. Okay. They had no idea what it was worth.
Right. A fully executed cable channel.
Yes.
Six hours on a fully executed cable.
Six hours. It was 3 a.m. to 9 a.m., but it was East Coast. It was one feed. So 3 a.m. was midnight West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on Saturdays and Sundays, I mean, that time was golden. I mean, we were generating a massive amount of sales for $1,000 a day.
I mean, I began doing radio midnight to 3 a.m. That was my original slot for years.
To 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you just go do it. You have an opportunity. You go, all right, try that.
We got 6 hours on Discovery. When Nashville Network was alive, it was 6 hours on Nashville before, I think it's Speed. 2 hours a day on Lifetime. I had 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. on Lifetime. But then I started doing this all around the world. So I went to Sky Channel and Rupert Murdoch at Sky. I went to the Kinnevik family in Sweden. The Marcucci family in Italy, which became Super Channel. And I just started going to the Cannes Film Festival every year, starting in 1990. And I had a little 10-foot by 10-foot booth that said, we pay you to run our TV shows. And they're like, wait a minute, we're here to buy programming. How can you pay us to run our shows? And said, well, we have a kitchen show. And at the end of the show, we sell you the wok and the knives we were using during the show. So we're going to pay you a percentage of those sales. And they're like, when can you start? Okay. All we had to do, we were dubbing Tony Little, Jack LaLanne, George Foreman, Billy Mays into dozens of languages all around the world. And this was in 1990 that I did that. And by 95, we were doing $500 million a year in business.
So there's sort of a big interesting topic here. One is, how does someone learn to identify and perceive opportunities out there? And It seems to me, maybe this is overly harsh, but that the current sort of millennial generation doesn't think this way or doesn't know about this, or we've done something wrong in terms of how we educate them. Sort of two separate topics. Let's address the how do you identify these things first.
Yeah. So, I mean, the good news is now, having been a shark on Shark Tank and continued to, you know, I haven't shot a new show in about 8 or 9 years, but I still get 150 inquiries a week from on deals. So about 600 a month. And so I say to people, if you're an investor and you only have 5 deals to look at, hopefully one of those is going to be a good one, because that's about a small pot to be analyzing. If you're looking at 150 a month, it's now you got to put the systems in place, you know, to filter the ones that don't make sense and the ones you should focus on, because you can get bogged down talking to too many people that there's no shot. So we have an instant kind of a checklist of things that we ask people, and we want to, are you in business? Do you have prototypes? And it's not just products, but we're probably 70-80% skewed towards products. So, and basically what we look for is there any test anywhere? Have you been on in a catalog? Have you been on a shopping channel? Have you run any ads? Have you, you know, I try to get the holy grail in this world. And you've got a project, TheraWorks, I think that's, I see running pretty well and pretty successful, is getting to the customer acquisition cost, right? And that's what we need to focus on, because when we did like the Tony Little ab isolator, you know, it was a $30 product, but we were getting an $8 customer acquisition cost. And I was able to sell 80,000 pieces a week for a while. Okay. And so it's, you know, if you've got good media, good customer acquisition cost, then the other thing that we look at is how do we increase the lifetime value? And a TheraWorks kind of a product has a good opportunity because it's continuity. Whereas, you know, when I'm selling the Tony Little Gazelle or whatever, they only want one.
Right.
I mean, some people would buy, you know, 2 juicers maybe, but, you know, generally it's a one shot deal. So
right.
In hindsight, I look at my industry and I say, Greg Rinker and Bill Guthrie, the beauty guys, they were the smartest guys in the business because they could get that customer acquisition cost honed in, but then that average lifetime value was going to be $300-$400 maybe. So I focused on gadgets, and, you know, I did very well. So I look back and I say, the only thing that could be smarter would be putting people on continuity things sooner. Cause we started putting Tony Little's customers on, you know, weight loss or metabolic boosters or protein shakes or something, so we could achieve a continuity relationship. And Tony has been very powerful. Like, he's a big seller of bison products, burgers and dogs and jerky, because people go on auto ship. So it's, you know, there's different things that I learned, but I became sort of the gadget guy, kitchen products, hardware products, dual saw drills and saws and mixers and blenders and woks and grills and whatever, and had a lot of fun with it and still do. And I'm still doing products, but you know, my business has morphed a little bit over the years now.
Seems like one opportunity would be just to cull through the cast-offs from your organization. There's probably stuff in there for somebody.
Well, next up is our friends at Green Chef. Green Chef lets you choose from a wide array of easy-to-follow lifestyles with select organic ingredients, and they are beautiful ingredients. I was opening my package and just marveling at the green beans and the quality of meats. Green Chef's expert chefs design flavorful recipes, make it easy to use, and discover new recipes every week that you'll love to cook. You can switch up your meal plan whenever you want. And Green Chef makes cooking, as I said, it's easy, with dinner options that work around your lifestyle, not the other way around. They let you, they adjust to you. Let Green Chef do the meal planning, grocery shopping, and most of the prep for you week after week. And it really, the meals are so delicious too. Everything is there. It's easy to use. And meal plans, of course, include vegan, vegetarian, paleo, and keto. I was doing the keto And again, I'm kind of picky about the meats. And I got to tell you, I was really impressed with these guys. Not only that, the spices were selected in such a way that it didn't upset me, my stomach, my system in any way. It was all just very impressive. So here's the deal. Go to Green Chef, GreenChef.com/Drew80, right? That's a new code for you. So it's GreenChef.com/Drew80. Use the code Drew80, and you will get $80 off across four boxes, including free shipping on your first box. It's an incredible deal. Green Chef, they kind of do it all for you. And like me, you will be impressed with the quality of the products, the ease with which you can change your meal plan, the ease of preparation, and the extraordinary taste. Sometimes I get a little bit, palate fatigue in my, paleo. Well, I'm sort of in the carnivore and keto world. I get palate fatigue, and these guys help me get away from palate fatigue by giving me some really delicious options. So again, it is greenchef.com/Drew80. And then use the code Drew80 to get $80 off across four boxes and free shipping on your first box. It is greenchef.com. Next up is my friends at Public Rec. I love their pants. I'm telling you, I spend part of my day in sweatpants, and I always feel sort of guilty about that. And the things are falling out of my pockets, and somebody comes to the door, I have to change my pants. Not anymore with Public Rec. I'm telling you, they get the length right, they get the waist right, and they've thought of everything. This is a style that you literally could walk out of your house into any environment, and when you're lounging at home, feel like you're in sweatpants. And the pockets are designed perfectly with the right depth so things don't fall out. There's pockets in the rear to help with your wallet. So again, you can throw your wallet in and get out and not feel like you're walking out in sweatpants, though you're as comfortable as literally as comfortable as if you are in sweatpants. And I don't know if you're like me, but maybe your wardrobe's changed a little bit during COVID-19, but I find myself spending a little more time in things like sweatpants. And the Public Rec pants have now become my go-to. I have two different colors, and I keep them in rotation. I'm laughing at myself because I'm always obsessing about whether they're clean or not, and I'm washing them, and I'm getting to them or not. I am telling you, these guys got it right. They thought of everything. It's breathable, stretchy, moisture-wicking fabric. You can wear them all day, every day, and they look great. They look brand new. Pockets have zippers if you want to close things down. And again, they're right depth anyway, so you don't have to zip. But you don't even see the zippers, by the way, so it does not look like a sweatpant. It looks kind of like a slack that comes in 9 different colors, one for each day of the week, and I frankly need more. They've also got comfortable shorts, T-shirts, polos, hoodies, jackets. And these guys, like I said, they're thinking of everything at Public Rec. They rarely discount, but right now they have an exclusive offer for our listeners at the Dr. Drew Podcast. Go to Public Rec, R-E-C, P-U-B-L-I-C-R-E-C, publicrec.com/Drew. Use promo code Drew, simple enough, and you will receive 10% off their great product. That is Public Rec, R-E-C. Use promo code Drew. Again, publicrec.com/Drew. Promo code Drew for 10% off.
Let me ask. I'm going to go back to the millennial thing in a second. But first, how many hours a night do you sleep?
About 6 or 7.
Okay.
I try to get that.
And you have a lot of energy, right?
I do. Thank you.
Right. And I've noticed that, and I have a whiff of this as well, as I certainly did at one point in my life for sure, that people that get a lot done sort of have a – and this is not at all meant to be pejorative. It's just meant to be descriptive – sort of a hypomanic quality. I mean, where there's boundless energy, don't need that much sleep, lots of lots going on in your head all the time. Do you agree with that? Do you see that in people that are successful generally?
I do.
How do we encourage that? How do we? I'm not saying it's not a pathology. It's a thing that happens to people that are very successful, and I'm not sure it's. I think it can be induced sometimes when people get really excited about what they're doing.
I try to focus on the positive sides. Right now, it's like when my son, he's 32 years old. He first started, came in, graduated from Penn State, and he's got the business degree, finance degree, and all that. And he came in and he started getting excited about products. And then, his first pick was a huge bomb. And he's like, Dad, I can't believe it. What happened? I'm so down and beat up. And it's like, and that used to happen to me. But then I finally realized, I said, I'm hitting on one out of three, one out of four. You're not going to hit on everything. Life is about failures and how to deal with them. So I would fail and I wouldn't just give up. We would tweak it, but I'm like, okay, we got to move on. We got to go to the next one because, you know, the next one's going to work and let's put our energy into it.
Is another thing I've noticed in people that are successful is that failure is not an ending. It's a process. It's a part of, you know, the process of learning.
For me, that has been exactly the way. And again, it wasn't from the beginning because I had to get over it, but we used to launch a dozen products a year. And I said, but if I'm hitting one out of three, I can only have three or four winners. Let's launch 50. And we did. And then 50, we'd hit 10 or 12. And so we do a lot bigger business.
But in there is managing risk. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. And so in the early days, I didn't have the money. So I had to raise the money and borrow the money. But as we started being more successful and my first exit was I had a couple million plus shares in a company that we went, that public company went from $1 to $20 a share. So, I had a little chips off the table moment at that time. So I didn't have to rely on everybody else all the time. Now I could choose and pick my own investments, but I also would still leverage it with other people's money. So I would bring partners in and we would go raise $3 million for five or six projects. And I would put some money in and so would some other people. And then, you know, cause I didn't want to only lose my own money if I didn't have to. And of course, when we were public, we had lines of credit and things like that. So we weren't personally involved. So that was always a good thing because I typically found myself as an entrepreneur, as an independent entrepreneur, loading it all back in, right? Yeah. My own money back into the risk factor. So I learned over time, and I will tell you, this took me longer than I would have liked not to always put my own money in because there's a limit to how much you've got. It's unlimited to how much the market has. Right. So I now have chosen a different path. I'm on like six or seven public boards. And I mean, when I tell you some of the things that can happen in a public board, like Dr. Drew, I don't know if you've ever heard of this drink called Celsius. It's a healthy energy drink.
Yeah.
So I joined the board 6 years ago. The stock was 10 cents when I met with them. By the time I got my block of stock, it was 20 cents a share, 22 cents. It's you look today, we've just grown this business over the last 6 years. The stock, it's a $1.4 billion company. The stock is $20 a share from 22 cents. And so I got in on the ground floor. This is what I do now.
No, and how do we, there's kind of a social question here, and I'm sort of hearkening back to the millennial question I asked about them sort of getting this that you've got, that I think millennials hearing this would go, oh my God, this is part of the problem where the imbalance between the haves and the have-nots, and they would see this all as you having opportunities that they don't have. Talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, so this deal came to me. The company was doing very little in sales, startup, not very few stores they were in. I spent 6 years helping grow this business, right? I mean, the stock was 22 cents, finally went to $1. And I remember my wife saying, you got millions of dollars in stock here, sell it, right? I'm like, no, I'm on the board. I'm an insider. I brought in Flo Rida and Khloe Kardashian and they're tweeting about the product. And, you know, and by the way, when I say I didn't know Flo Rida, I went to pitched him at his office and made him a deal, gave him a couple shares of stock. And instead of a bunch of cash, because the company didn't have the cash. So it's, you know, I can say that I paid my dues getting into this deal. This was not like an Uber ready to take off. This was a true startup.
Right. So what you would say is I saved the company. I made the company grow. But the opportunity, I think, is what young people are sort of feeling they don't have today. And I don't feel like they know what you know. They don't get it, you know, what you're talking about. What do we do with that? And some people sort of frame it as we've let a generation down in terms of their financial literacy. Is that the case, or is there something – you know, how do we do
it? I think millennials need to they need to go out and create some type of special services that they can provide. And they need to have a niche in the market. And my niche was, you know, buying late night unsold airtime that created a business.
Right.
And so I know some great entrepreneurs that are millennials that are building these Amazon businesses right
now. Yeah, yeah. What you're telling them, and this is what I've actually told my own kids, is that things are a little stagnant. It is a little weird. Go be an entrepreneur. Figure it out.
Go be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, this it's forcing you to do that. Do it. Do it with both hands.
And even if you're already employed, I say get a side hustle first. Because I don't tell people to quit their job. In fact, this is I say my first book. This actually was my first book in 1990, the 100 best spare time businesses today. Mm. And I said in 1990 when the Gulf War hit and people were screaming about, oh my God, and my business went down 80-90% for about 6 weeks that we were on TV all around the world when the Gulf War hit. I said, get a side hustle. I got 100 of them I'm going to tell you about. And I've been preaching it for 30 years ever since, even to my kids. In fact, I've got two boys, one's 32 and one's 22. My 32 has been with me 10 years. He's my operations finance guy, and he's rock solid and he's unbelievable. Brian Harrington, Penn State graduate. My 22-year-old's got a little more artsiness into him. So we've got a business we created for him, and he's out knocking on doors right now, literally canvassing on door to door. So teaching him the hard way. People have got, they got to be prepared to get out there and do some testing. And I say, I test before I invest today with products. I don't want to waste a lot of time and money if it's not going to work.
Right. So it, you know, these are, I mean, the kindest thing I can say about this moment in history is that it's interesting. And it seems like you're sort of super optimistic in all settings. You brought up other historical settings that I remember as being pretty, it was easy to get pessimistic during each of those moments you've talked about that you push through with ideas and optimism. How do you stay optimistic now?
Well, so a lot of businesses are hurting, and many of them, when I look, I mean, the other day, a guy, he says, I'm in trouble. I need some help. I need some money. A lot of people come to me initially for money, and then we decide, is it a money issue?
I'm going to stop you. I'm going to frame this way. You're going to help me be optimistic right now. While we were off the air, you and I talked about how we both have speaking lives that we do that were taken from us by COVID. Yes. So our lives were taken from us. It has made me very depressed. I want you to coach me, Kevin, to stay optimistic. What do I do? I'm looking for things. I'm always trying to, but I'm still depressed. I'm still pissed. I'm still miss my life. What do I do?
Right. Well, so what I have done and what hopefully some
No, you tell me what to do. Make me feel better. Okay. Here we go.
I would move. What we're doing right now is great because we're virtually connecting.
Yes.
And in the past, you know, we had a one-on-one meeting at a restaurant not too long ago before COVID, right?
Yeah.
And you remember that meeting, right?
Yeah.
And so now I'm connecting with people. I mean, I'm doing events in Malaysia and Hong Kong and Singapore and, you know, at late night because I do them midnight to 2 a.m. because there it's noon to 2 p.m. that time. So I don't know if you have opportunities like that to be virtual with any of your audiences.
No, I do. I've started to do a streaming show every day and I've done more podcasting. There's all kinds of things doing, but it's still feeling like I'm in mud. I'm still depressed.
One more thing and a couple more things I would suggest because I'm getting approached by companies that are asking me to become an advisor to their company, join their advisory board or their board of directors.
Yeah.
And this is what I was just talking about with Celsius. You just never know. I mean, I picked up millions of shares in a public company.
No, you know what? That is. It's funny when you were saying that. That has begun to happen to me too a little bit.
And this is the area that I think we should focus on.
Yeah, and I actually thought maybe I should. About a month ago, I thought maybe I should just pivot into that and just start to really contribute to businesses and products and help people develop.
You have
things.
Such knowledge, and if you had somebody positioning you as a great addition to their board. Because you bring another dimension.
Yeah.
I have a couple different agents that work with me to bring me the board deals.
I didn't know that world existed. That's interesting.
Yes. So there are some people that can help you take a look at board opportunities, and I can connect you there. But it's also you got to kind of get out there and hustle, put yourself out there for that kind of thing. So maybe you could be going on some other podcast. You're familiar with Genius Network, mm-hmm. Joe Polish. Mm-hmm. There's another company called Board of Advisors, Mike Calhoun. There's The War Room, Roland Frazier.
Here's what I've learned just in this moment. And this is what other people should take away from this. Ask for help. I asked you for help just now, and you gave me some help. And it's like, oh, that actually changed my attitude a little bit in this very brief little interaction. You can change people's thinking. You can pivot. You go, I'm going to think about that. And so I would say, number one, I don't know if you'd agree with this. Number one, ask for help.
Ask for help. That's what we say. Ask for a mentor. What's the first step?
Yeah.
Ask.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 I get it. I think the little interaction we had is very telling. Now, what if people don't have this, you know, out there in the world, a lot of people don't have access to a Kevin Harrington. You know, I get to talk to Kevin Harrington and I asked him for help. Where do people go? You know, you mentioned a bunch of things, but give me that's where I can go. Give me an average person where do they look?
Yep. So when I was just Kevin Harrington, Mr. Startup, this infomercial, and by the way, people looked at me at that time, oh, you're one of those sleazy guys with those infomercial things late night. You know, I'm like, why am I sleazy? Because I'm selling kitchen products and hardware products. But there was a time when infomercials got that little sleaze reputation. But what I first did is I looked at my checkbook and I say, okay, I write a lot of checks to a lot of people, accountants, lawyers, phone centers, credit card processors, bankers, lawyers, etc. I need help. So I reached out to my internal, my accountants, my lawyers, hey, I need a good finance guy, mentor to help me raise some capital. So the guy that I got that was a retired bank president came through one of my internal contacts, that people that I was doing business with, because they wanted to see me grow. They wanted, I was using media companies and telemarketing companies and phone centers and customer service centers, accountants, I need help. You know, put your hand up, and boy, it came back. I got like 15 or 20 recommendations. You need to raise some capital? Call this guy. Call this guy. Call this guy.
But Kevin, I'm going to interrupt you. I think that's still Kevin asking for help, or someone like Kevin. Let's say I'm a 19-year-old in the Bronx, let's give me a college degree. I've got a college degree or an AA. I've got an associate degree. I'm living in the Bronx. I have no capital. I have no network, but I got a lot of heart. Where do I start? Where do I go first?
You have to start by plugging into networks. You can't do it by yourself. You know, join.
Is there a web? But is there a web? I mean, if they read your book, is there going to be very specific stuff? Yeah. Do I join LinkedIn?
Talk about that. And joining social media, joining LinkedIn, joining local. I mean, I talk about the Chamber of Commerce because that's what it used to be when I was back in the day in Cincinnati, Philadelphia. I don't even know. I know I speak at Chambers of Commerce meetings still.
All right.
So I know they have
that's
it still.
That's good. That's good.
Those are inexpensive ways to connect.
So two things. Clubs. Like you could be, clubs.
Meetups.
Chamber of Commerce. Go to speeches. Talk to the guys that's giving the speech. I know. I like to help young people. I try to do it a lot. But there's a lot of times when I'm interacting with people that I know have a lot of energy. And I'm just like, I don't got anything right now.
They start connecting, and if they have messages that are unique to the market, they should start creating content.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I say, this is a little book. I say, write a book. This book is 50 pages. It's a giveaway. I call it a lead magnet. We wrote this and published it in 10 days. It's all my content, self-published, but it's a giveaway.
And now you can self-publish now, which is great, right? You didn't used to have that option.
And so I, you know, the other day I met a guy that owns, he's a big tire store, and he runs ads on TV, and he's like, man, he says, I just feel like I'm doing the same old, same old. I said, do you have a database of your customers? He's like, what's that? I'm like, a list of the people that call off your ads. And oh no, we've never done any kind of management like that at all. And so I'm like, you know, you need to create, when you do your commercials, have them call and get a free report of some type about how to keep your tires in great shape year round. And so there, you know, because he's already paying for himself to be on television, but he's not really creating himself as a guru. And he's got the opportunity to do that.
Kevin, I really appreciate your willingness to talk to my audience, and that the new book, A Mentor to Millions, Secrets of Success in Business, Relationships, and Beyond, go to Amazon, mentortomillionsbook.com, at Harrington Kevin. There's no underscore or anything between Harrington and Kevin, just at Harrington Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, the best place to go is kevinmentor.com.
Okay.
And if you go through that site, I actually have set up a 30-day mentoring program that Mark, Tim, and I, the co-authors, we're going to do live sessions, virtual sessions for 30 days. Anybody that buys the book.
My 19 or 20 year old in the Bronx can go right now, right?
There you go. Yeah. Right away, they get 30 days free. We've shot a lot of videos custom to this situation, and we're going to do live sessions, take people right off the floor and take their questions. So
that's
for
great.
$18, you're going to get 30 days to hang out with us also.
That is fantastic. Yeah. And I have this deep belief that as unpleasant as the circumstances are right now, that I have this overriding faith in our system and our spirit. And I feel like the millennials who are so unhappy right now, that entrepreneurship is the way out for them. And it's going to be hard, and it's not going to be easy. But again, tell them where to go, buy the book, and then where do they go? Tell them one more time.
Yeah. KevinMentor.com. You can buy the book. And if you buy through that site, you're going to get 30 days of free mentoring. It'll take you to Amazon when you go there. But now we've got you logged through our site. You get 30 days of live mentoring, virtual mentoring, videos that we've created, et cetera, et cetera. So
great.
Exciting stuff.
Kevin, great spending time with you again. Thank you so much, and good luck with the whole operation. And we will see everyone next time.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Drew. Appreciate it. It's a great time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.